Wisconsin lawmakers are on the verge of making major, profound changes to K-12 school system in Wisconsin. So it's a great time for Wisconsin newsmakers with Superintendent of Public Instruction, Tony Evers. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Steve. Good to be here.
Let's start with the good news. Governor Walker in February recommended a $127 million cut in K-12 aids.
Mm-hmm.
And the Republicans on the joint finance, they're all but done with their budget.
Right.
And they are done with K-12 issues.
Right.
Restored that and added back $69 million for the second year, the 2016-2017. Mm-hmm. I don't see you doing handstands. But that's a good thing, isn't it?
Well, I guess. I mean, they could have given us no money. Or $1.
But it's better than the governor's original budget.
Sure, but I think it begs the question. Why? I mean, nothing changed since that was initiated to there was no additional money. Why was there a cut to begin with? I mean, I think that's a legitimate question to have answered. Why was there a $127 million hole to begin with when suddenly it got changed and we can now all do, we can run around the square patting ourselves on the back? But why was it there to begin with? Nothing changed between here and there.
Okay, but our 424 school districts don't have to budget in the next school year anticipating a $127 million cut.
Got it. So that's a 0%. And that won't do anything for increasing utility costs, transportation costs, any number of costs that are not held to that same zero amount.
And then in the second year, they're going up, I think, $69 million, which is a bump of 75 per pupil.
Something
is that
like
right?
that. Something like that. But we have to figure out, I mean, considering what they've just passed in the UW Regents budget around independent charter schools, that might change too, because that money for independent charter schools and for vouchers, which will both be increased, that takes money out of the public school system too. So it's hard to say what that second year is. It certainly isn't a cost of living.
Well, the joint finance, the GOPers on joint finance came out with their package on K-12
mm-hmm.
at about 8 o'clock and passed it within 3 or 4 hours.
Right.
So I haven't had a chance to completely sort it through. But let me ask the question this way.
Sure.
In February, the governor did recommend some help for rural schools. Is there anything in the final package or the joint finance budget as it's built right now for rural schools?
Yes, it was my proposal that I prepared for the governor, and that was to increase sparsity aid for smaller school districts. That's there, as is some other stuff, but that just kind of pales to the overall malaise of a 0% or even less.
Okay, now let's talk about the profound changes. First of all, let's open with choice.
Mm-hmm.
There's right now as a 1,000 student cap on choice outside our two urban districts, Milwaukee and Racine.
Right.
So the joint finance budget would remove that with a caveat that no public school district could lose more than 1% in choice students per year.
Right.
Talk about the potential impact of that.
Well, after 10 years, that 1% will disappear.
There
will be full vouchers statewide. And the impact of that is significant. And not only, it isn't just kids leaving the public schools, because that is hardly happening. Most of the young people that will be getting vouchers next year as it expands will be students that are already there.
Who are attending private schools this year.
Right.
I just want to make sure.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly. And so kind of moving forward, you have that money, that pot of money being used to decrease what's available for traditional public schools, and that will continue. So essentially what we've created is a second system of public education in the state, or publicly supported education in the state, when we can't afford one.
The per pupil funding in the choice program that's in the joint finance, $72.10 for K-8 students, $78.56 for high school students. How does that compare to what the voucher students are getting now, sir?
That's like I want to say 6 or 8% increase. Yeah, which is more than the upper for traditional public schools.
Okay, now let's talk about the impact of that. The Fiscal Bureau memo that Representative Barca and Representative Sandy Polk came out with. Projected diversion to private schools, $600 million to $800 million over the next 10 years.
Right.
That number must not have surprised you.
No, it didn't. In fact, it could, it's a lot of moving parts there. It could be actually more. And again, that $600 to $800 million, that a lot of it will be spent on students that are already there in those private schools. And so essentially what we've decided as a state is we're going to subsidize private education in the state to, it's probably the same level that we are traditional public schools.
Is there any other state in the nation that subsidizes, that helps private schools to the extent that Wisconsin would under the joint finance budget term?
Not many, if any. I think Indiana, Ohio experimented with some statewide vouchers, but I don't think it was at this level of expense. And of course, this has been ongoing for 15 plus years, 20 years in Milwaukee. So it's not a small chump change. And it's not that I have this instinctive opposition to choice. The bottom line is that when there's money going into System B, it's not going to be going into System A. And System A is the one that's traditionally been our engine of our democracy and engine of our economy in the state of Wisconsin.
Well, under the funding that's in the JFC budget, restoration of the 127, then plus 69 mm-hmm. the second year, what adjustments will our public schools have to make over the next 2 years?
Yeah. And also have to recognize that over both years of the biennium, the revenue limits aren't increased. It's the first time ever that those have not increased. The impact will be what they've been dealing with in the past. Cuts, smaller, larger class sizes, less investment in media and technology. It's not good. I mean, any way you slice it, you know, it's great that we're at 0%. It's great that we're at X percent in the second year, whatever it turns out to be after all the things are taken out of it. But the fact of the matter, costs are still continuing. I mean, there's just no way to rationally support that move.
You've watched our K-12 schools a long time. Why do private schools continue to do pretty well in the capital?
Well, one of it's politics. A lot of money in that system. A lot of money spent lobbying. Lots of money. Three former speakers are out there advocating for it. So it's high powered. It's money, and also the notion. And this is not just Wisconsin. Is that choice is a value that trumps all else. Mm-hmm. And I like choice. I'm just not sure it trumps all else.
What about the stats and the studies? Do they still show that the students in choice schools are not much ahead, if any ahead?
That's what we see in Milwaukee, and we'll find out if that's true statewide. But statewide, now we're talking about kids that are already there, so I'm not even sure what kind of comparisons we can make anymore. So I think the answer basically is no, there seems to be no difference. So now we're supporting in achievement. So now we're supporting two systems. When we can't afford one.
But you and I have been hearing the argument for 25 years. It empowers parents to make a decision, the best school for their kids. Therefore, parents are more engaged. Your response?
Well, I love to have parent engagement, but that happens in the public schools also. And I think there's all sorts of choice. I mean, gosh, you look at Milwaukee, MPS, there probably is no place in the country that has as much choice opportunities right within the Milwaukee public schools, whether it's charters, whether it's schools for the art, whether it's foreign languages. So there's plenty of choice, and the rest of the state's kind of catching up to that. So there's all sorts of opportunities for parents to be engaged.
Well, you mentioned MPS. Quick follow-up. How is the new superintendent driver doing over there? What changes has she made?
Yeah, she's doing a great job. She continues to focus on the hard work in the schools. It's not sexy stuff, or it's not like, okay, we're going to change governance, therefore everything is going to be better. But they have had some good success in even some of the lowest performing schools. It's just going to take time. So people need to understand her passion is around closing that achievement gap, and she's already starting to do it.
There was a task force, and I interviewed both you and the chair of it mm-hmm. on closing the achievement gap.
Yeah.
Still a work in progress?
Oh, absolutely. We have a long way to go, but we're seeing some success. We seem to be closing the gap in graduation rates among African-American kids and their peers and other kids of color. So, yeah, I think we're making a headway, but it's kind of a deep-seated thing that we have to deal with in the state, and it's going to take some time. But I feel confident that people now, when they talk about the achievement gap, it isn't like, what are you talking about? I mean, the general public understands that this is an issue.
Well, I saw the DPI press release on the percentage of students graduating from high school in 4 years. Mm-hmm. It went up slightly, mm-hmm. 0.7%.
Right.
But to what, 88 or 89, do you remember?
Yeah, it's right around 89, I'd say, something like that.
The next page, when you look at African American graduation rates, 20 percentage points lower than
right.
that?
Absolutely. That's significant. And I think it points to...
Is that getting better?
Yes. It's just slightly. I mean, it's just, you know, minuscule. But it is trending in the right direction. But it talks to the issue of really kind of reforming what high school is all about and kind of in that issue. And that's another thing that Darian Driver in Milwaukee Public Schools is one of the focus areas as kind of changing the culture in high schools. I think that would be a significant help.
Okay. Now let's go through some of the changes in the joint finance K-12 package one by one.
Well, do we have like 5 hours?
Nope. lawmakers told the Milwaukee County Executive to choose an overseer responsible for improvements at 3 failing MPS schools in 2016, 2017, and then the number could go up to 5.
Yeah.
Good idea, bad idea?
It's one of these where it's let's change governance and suddenly all is going to be well. I just don't buy that. I think will I work with the county executive if that happens and try to help him do the best job he can? But I'm just not sure that governance is going to make a difference in the school district. So I'm ambivalent about that, but I'm more than willing to work with the county executive. In turn, I think there might be some constitutional issues there about handing off leadership to from one entity to another, for state superintendent constitutional issues. We're looking at that, but that's kind of under the radar stuff. I'm more concerned about having MPS succeed well and have Darian Driver succeed well. If they can give her some more authority to make that happen, God will it.
If the provision letting the Milwaukee County exec pick an overseer is signed into law, do you expect a lawsuit?
I don't know.
Constitutionality
issue? I don't know about that, but the Constitution is pretty clear that supervision of public instruction is a state superintendent's responsibility. And in the lawsuit, essentially that happened several years ago when the Supreme Court unanimously turned back Tommy Thompson's efforts around this issue,
yes.
Said when something is taken from the state superintendent's constitutional duties and given to another entity, that's a problem. Now, whether that's a problem here or not, I don't know.
Joint Finance revived a plan that you and I have discussed to give vouchers to disabled students, special ed students. Still a bad idea?
Still a bad idea. When you ask parents to surrender their rights at the schoolhouse door, especially parents that have students with disability, that's a bad idea.
I didn't see this one coming. They voted to require high school students to pass a civics test to graduate. Students could retake it until they passed. What's your reaction?
I'd say it's not well thought out. Do I like civics? Yes. Do I think it's important that kids shouldn't be have civics as a core of their education? Yes. We're already under fire for testing too much. I just think this adds to it. And frankly, it's not the test that they're talking about is not a kind of a broad-based measure of civics as it's done in our schools.
So yeah, I went to the website of the Department of Homeland Security, mm-hmm. and went to the citizenship test. And whenever I ask what type of civics test, they seem to point me to that.
Yeah.
Have you had a chance to look at those questions?
I've seen some of the questions, and they just seem like regurgitation and not deep knowledge. And so I'm not sure kind of making that another hurdle for our kids, especially for our kids that don't speak English very well. I just think that's a problem for us. And it's somewhat of a distraction, I think.
You think teachers will teach to the test, the citizenship test, on the Department of Homeland Security website?
Well, if they're going to have to pass it to graduate, absolutely. And as it's described by the authors, it's like, well, this can be taken at home. It can be taken, you know, sitting on the end of the block with your iPad, whatever. It just seems more of a statement than some sort of educational panacea.
Is the joint finance provision workable that allows charter, private, and online students to participate in school district sports and other events in the public schools, sir?
Is that a good idea?
Is it workable?
No. It's not workable, and as you've seen from school districts around the state talking about it, again, you know, it's interesting. You have this laundry list, but of that laundry list, how many of these things have actually had a hearing across the state of Wisconsin saying, is this a good idea? You know, it's a good idea among those folks that have thrown this together at the last minute, but that's one of them. And if they had hearings around the state, they would never have let that come into the budget.
And the two specific provisions, joint finance voted to require that a teacher's license be issued. DPI must issue a teacher's license for core subjects, English, social studies, math, and science, to anyone with a bachelor's degree if the hiring authority, the school district, or the charter school deems that person qualified.
That's breathtaking in its stupidity. I can't tell you how out of whack that is to reality. First of all, you look at any kind of surveys, quality teacher is a real priority of parents. And so by saying, okay, if you have a degree in rock science from UW La Crosse, and however, I want to teach English at your high school, and you go in there and you know the superintendent, and they say, yeah, sure, you do a great job, it's an automatic license. Same way with those non-academic areas.
Who's the ultimate hiring authority, the school board or the principal of that school? Excuse me for interrupting.
Well, ultimately the school board, but the fact of the matter is that's usually delegated to an administrator, and it's a pro forma. But and then with non-academic areas, you could have a high school dropout teaching a course. And to me,
that's that other provision that I want to get to. Legislators voted to require that a teacher's license be issued to anyone to teach non-core subjects if, the local school or the school district deems that person qualified and experienced. That's the one you were just getting
into. Right, and essentially what we're doing here is not having a teacher license approval. It's like licensing has gone away. Whoever you hire is cool. Wrong idea. The state has standards for morticians and any other number of occupations in the state for protection purposes, for quality control. But suddenly we're going to say, teachers, it's just going to be a hiring decision. Bad idea.
Well, rather than have me read from your press release last week, talk about the process by which now teachers get certified.
Well, by the present system is the traditional way. A student would go to UW La Crosse, go to the School of Education. They certify. They get the information to us. We license. But we have probably 8 to 10 alternative ways of doing it, too, that to some extent bypasses that process. So there's all sorts of flexibility out there. You know, however, as state superintendent, I will never accede to the idea that you only have to know stuff, you have to know how to teach. And that's what's blatantly missing here, and it was blatantly missing in the governor's original proposal. So even with our alternative licensing plans, yes, we make sure that they know their content area, but they also have to know about the developmental levels of kids at different ages, making sure they understand their learning styles, all the things that make teaching such a complex topic. They have to know that too, whether they go through an alternative route or through a traditional university system route. So this essentially takes the licensing system out of being, if everybody bought in. You know, thank gosh there's enough school districts out there that are saying we would never hire somebody like that. But
they could.
They could, absolutely. Absolutely they could. And some will.
Representative Mary Chaya, who said she sponsored this, told the Journal Sentinel, excuse me, that I did it to help rural districts and give them more flexibility. Your response?
I respond just like Jerry Feeney, head of the Rural Association, did when he said, that's not what we're talking about. We just need some flexibility. We don't want to put, I mean, he didn't say this, but he said, no, that's not going to help rural schools. But you just think about it. Even if it starts out small over the next 10 years, we'll have completely gutted our teachers in the state of Wisconsin. And to say that they're not reacting to this would be an understatement. I was at a graduation party this weekend, and that's all the teachers were talking about. It's one of these things where they're concerned about the future, but they're also saying, how many times are we going to get kicked around the block? We're now being told by the governor and by the legislature that our preparation is inappropriate, it's worthless. I mean, sooner or later, as a state, we have to say, you know, we have to value these people that are teaching our future. Right now, that's not happening.
Would, if these two provisions became law, would Wisconsin have the lowest standards for
absolutely.
Teachers?
Absolutely.
In the nation?
In the nation. Why would we want to go race to the bottom in the state on such an important issue as teacher quality?
And there's a statement in this press release I want to ask you about. Maybe you've determined it. I want to read the line. These provisions may preclude, that's an important word to come back to and correct, may preclude the fingerprinting and background checks required of all other licensed school staff?
Right.
So
at the state level.
Are you sure of that? Because
sure.
there's a may in there.
Well, I'm sure that it may preclude it unless they do it at the local level. The state, DPI, me, is prohibited from adding any other requirement to this proposal. So no to fingerprinting.
So it would have to be a local. It would have to be a new standard set by the school district to hire these people
right.
who don't have
right.
what you now have to have to teach.
Right.
That's profound changes. That's biggest changes in what generations? What
generations? Possibly since we went from German to English as the language that we spoke in our schools back in the 1880s. Yeah, this is huge. I mean, it's a long time coming. A lot of these are not necessarily surprises. They're on checklists all across the country of different groups that are either opponents of public schools or proponents of other types of schooling. And this is one of those things on the checklist. So it's not a surprise, but people in the state just have to understand what a significant change this is. And in my opinion, and I think many others, significant changes to the detriment of our public schools.
How are you going to try to fight some of these provisions? Question one. Question two, if you could get one or two of these removed, which would be the most important ones to delete, sir?
Yeah. I would say we will continue to talk and fight. We actually, for the first time ever, Steve, we actually have parent groups advocating all across the state. I mean, the parents of the state always have a difficult time connecting on public school issues, mainly because the statewide organizations aren't particularly strong. This now they are. They're advocating. They're crystallizing their thoughts. They're addressing legislators. So that's a good thing, and I'll continue to talk about it. And if I had my druther, I mean, certainly I think it would be nice to finally get a cost of living raise from the legislature. That's not going to happen. The licensing thing has to go.
The licensing of those changes?
That they're hugely misinformed. And so that is critical that we continue to have high-quality teachers in this state and not go to, well, here's a hiring system. So, yeah, that's a problem. And the other problems I have, we haven't talked about it much, but the whole issue of two independent charter schools that came out into the, not our budget, but not surprisingly,
the Board of Regents,
Board of Regents budget, where the legislators are significantly empowering the University of Wisconsin system, not the regents, not the president, and Waukesha County executive, and others in the state to open to our charters across the state, frankly, but in primarily southern Wisconsin.
So would all 26 UW system schools be able to operate charters?
No, it's going to be done at the system level. There's going to be one individual in the system that allegedly reports to Ray Cross that has the authority to him or herself, not Ray Cross or the Board of Regents, to open charter schools all in
one person authority?
Excuse me.
Charters are?
Yes, in Madison and in Milwaukee, large school districts, 25,000 kids or above.
Okay.
So he's got that authority. He can open up as many as he wants to in Madison, open up as many as he wants to in Milwaukee, and then
subject to approval by the regents.
No way, they just
only to the president.
Not even to the president. The Ray Cross couldn't stop them. I mean, it's the most unless the statutory language changes. From what I've read it 100 times, is that this person once hired is czar, and can make these changes in Madison and Milwaukee. In addition, Senator Farrell and County Executive Farrell. is being given the authority to open charter schools in Waukesha County.
Schools plural or one?
There's no limit.
There's no limit.
Of course, it's probably going to be limited to some extent by geography. But the problem is, with all this, it is taking decision-making away from school boards, for one thing, or even the Board of Regents. But second of all, it's costly. These schools will draw money from wherever the kids come from. So they put a charter school in Madison that draws kids from a handful from Verona, a handful from McFarland. The money follows the kid, and those schools will have less money. Same thing with in Milwaukee or any of the other possible charter school new authorizers. So that's another problem. It's hard to fathom why this happened, but it's all, you know, kind of part of the same milieu that
as superintendent, you're a member of the Board of Regents. What did the putting on your Board of Regent hat, what do you think will be the impact of a 2-year cut of $250 million and not the $300 million that the governor proposed in February, sir?
Well, it's similar to public schools. It's better than the alternative, but $250 million is a bunch, and it's, you know, you think of campuses like Superior and others that are just absolutely just hanging on by their fingertips. It's going to be a significant thing. Additionally, they've made some significant changes around shared governance and some of the things that people feel strongly about that are within the institution. So it's going to be interesting meetings coming up.
What about taking tenure out of state law? Will you, as one member of the Board of Regents, vote then, since it's no longer required by state law, will you vote for a regent reaffirmation of tenure?
Yes, I will. My concern is, given the language, and I haven't had a chance to have anybody define some of these things, I'm not sure there is any way that the regents could say, here's shared governance, here's tenure, we're going to take it over here and put it into board policy as is. I don't think so. So there's going to have to be a lot of discussion around that at the Board of Regents level. But do I support it? Yes, I think it's an important part.
And should a tenured prof now who works in the UW system, should she or he be very concerned about this change?
I would be, absolutely.
Why?
And just because you've lost a significant right that you had under state law. So that's why a lot of people come here. And so I don't think that's been something that's been kind of hassled about over the years, whether too much or too little, shared governance, and where's the decision making. And I just think there's easier ways to deal with this than to say start over. And I'm disappointed in it. It certainly was no surprise because it was part of the governor's budget.
Okay, just as we wind up here, has there been a decision on SAGE? Does this budget phase out SAGE?
No.
It doesn't? Okay.
No, it does not.
Okay. The Badger exam. Bring us up to date on that. Speaker Voss says taxpayers got ripped off by the Badger exam, which has to be given to those in between third and eighth grade. Can you update me on the Badger exam?
Yeah, well, I disagree with the ripoff. We've had over, I think, 1.2 million of those tests have been completed in the testing window, successfully completed. We had all sorts of trouble getting it started, as you likely know, with different issues, but we've resolved that. We've come to terms with the vendors as to how much money we have to pay and will pay. So I think it's, frankly, given the way it started and how it ended up, it's been a success across the state. And I'd say, you know, there's been some opt-out buzz, but in the end of the day, we'll have, I'd say, 98% of the students in the state.
Did you see, did Wisconsin see more parents having their students opt out of that?
Yes, but it went from, we used to have a 0.5 opt-out to maybe 2% opt-out, which is a change, there's no question, but 98% is pretty good as compared to other states. And if you think about it, we had tens of thousands of students have taken these tests, paper and pencil, for years, forever, mm-hmm. and we flipped the switch and did it all online. And frankly, I even though we had a rough start and there was a lot of angst around that, angst for me too, once it got going, it worked.
Well, what's the status of the bill? Have both houses approved it, and has the governor signed it that would say that the Badger exam results couldn't be used for teacher accountability and gauging teacher performance.
Yes.
Has that been signed into law?
Yep. This next year.
Do you support it?
Yes.
Yep. Why?
Just because of the angst around it, and making sure that we have another test in place, because as you know, the Badger test is going to go away. Mm-hmm. We have another test in place. So just to kind of get through this transition time, I agree that that's a good idea.
And final issue, what's the update on accountability? You have this dispute between the Assembly and the Senate.
I'm not sure where it's going to end up. I think we will continue to have, once we get through this next year, a report card that's viewed as one of the most transparent in the nation, and we will have a good accountability system. I think kind of the hard lines around, well, does this mean we have to punish schools, or is transparency enough? I come down on the side of transparency, frankly, and I think that's where we'll end up.
And this is my final question.
Yeah.
What does the budget, the joint finance budget, tell you on Common Core? You cannot promote it. Does it derail it? Does it put it out of business?
Doesn't do anything to it.
Doesn't do anything to Common Core?
No. Common Core was adopted by 99 and 44 one-hundredths of the percents of the teachers, or the school districts in the state. So it's being implemented now. We just had tests that measured our implementation of it. We're moving forward.
Okay. The final question.
Yeah.
Summarize the joint finance budget impact on K-12 schools in Wisconsin.
Generally, I think it's a negative budget. It could have been worse, and I guess that's why you start real bad, so you can say it could have been worse. But I'd say it's negative money-wise, and it's certainly a lot of questionable and I think some misguided policies that need to be addressed. This is on a fast track, so I'm hopeful that we can have our voices heard. I'm not hopeful that anything will change.
Okay. Superintendent of Public Instruction, Tony Evers, thanks for talking to
you
Wisconsin
bet.
Tonight.
Thank you. Bet.